Yeah, you're in an automobile, and you know how when you drive a car a lot, the tires get misaligned, and you have to constantly correct the trajectory of the car. So passively living your life is kind of like just letting the car take you wherever it's going. So yeah, you're going to get to a destination, but it's probably not going to be the destination you want to get to, versus intentionally and actively changing, which means you are guiding it to a destination that you want to go.
Light Watkins, thanks for coming back on the Mindful Movement Podcast.
Thanks, man. Happy to be here.
It's been a couple years. I remember our first encounter. I was kind of jealous just reading about your willingness to kind of travel in a minimalist style, and you talked a little bit about that. There's like a part of me that kind of craves that, but just doesn't really seem realistic with like the anchors I have with my family and businesses and such. But it seems like since then, you've been quite busy writing your fifth book, as I understand it.
Yep. I just released this book here, The Year You Transform. And the whole thing with the last book during our last conversation, which was, it was Travel Light, this guy right here, you know, that I embarked upon this nomadic journey when I was 45, I believe. And I figured that would be like the last time in my life that I would be able to, this is going to sound oxymoronic, but comfortably travel with just a backpack. And I'm happy I had that experience. It lasted for about 5 years until I settled in Mexico City. And now I feel like I've got that out of my system, and I'm actually in a different phase where I'm more so, you know, in a place of just grounding, and I got a puppy, and so I'm you know, making my home here for I don't know how
You're
long,
anchored.
But
okay,
yeah, I'm anchored. But you know, ironically, I'm still embodying a lot of the principles of that nomadic lifestyle that the I called it spiritual minimalism. So I'm actually in an Airbnb, which means I don't own any of the furniture, and I've been here for several years. We're off the platform at this point, but. If I had to leave, say tomorrow, I could still theoretically move into the backpack again if I needed to. So I haven't really accumulated a lot of stuff, but I'm definitely living a more grounded lifestyle.
Would the puppy fit in the backpack?
I'd have to figure that out.
What kind of puppy you got?
A little pug.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're cute. So you have to listen to them try to breathe.
You know, she doesn't have like a severe breathing problem, ironically. I don't know what that is about, but I was expecting that to be the case, but it hasn't been the case, gratefully.
Gotcha. I have a puggle, so it's got half of that. And as she gets older, you could hear her from farther and farther away. But
maybe
it's cute.
It's
a cute rumble as she's restful. So the new book, you said Transform, The Year You Transform. So I assume this is about like some sort of habit change of some sort, transformation.
Yeah, the subtitle is The Quickest Path to Changing Your Life for the Better. And the premise is that there are a few paths to change that people take. Two of the most popular ones are what I call the eat, pray, love path, where you blow up your life. You know, you leave your relationship, you quit your job, you do something extreme. I'm going to move to Bali and go join a monastery. That's what I need to do because I really want to change things up. I'm miserable. And I think that works for some people, but for most people, it's unsustainable. It's a little bit too much, too quickly. And the other path is the crisis path to change, where you just don't do anything. You just stay in the dead-end job. You stay in the relationship that's not fruitful until something really bad happens, and then you have no choice but to change. And so I'm introducing the reader to a third path, which I call the tortoise approach to change. And the tortoise approach is a little counterintuitive. It comes from the fable, The Tortoise and the Hare. Right. In that fable, as we all know from our childhood, the hare and the tortoise are in a race, and the hare darts out of the starting line and goes extremely fast and then ends up burning himself out and has to take a lot of breaks and rests. Whereas the tortoise just slowly and steadily makes his way to the finish line and ends up winning the race. And so the tortoise approach to change, as I outline in the book, is about optimizing for your average busy day, which is really the big obstacle that I think stops a lot of us from continuing on in the change process. Like, our intentions are great. I want to get in the best shape of my life. I want to become financially more secure. I want to find my soulmate, you know, whatever the intention is, it's great. What we don't oftentimes realize is that these are not passive goals, meaning we have to be very intentional. And ideally, we want to be as consistent as we can be in showing up to do the little things that it would require to achieve those goals. If we try to do too much too soon, we end up burning ourselves out, and then we stay stuck in the status quo and frustrated. And then we start telling ourselves stuff like, oh, it's not meant to be, or I'm just not the kind of person who goes to the gym all the time, or, you know, these kinds of things. But what if there was a different approach where instead of, and you're a gym owner, so, you know, somebody once said the hardest exercise in the gym is just walking through the front door.
Heaviest weight in the gym, front door.
Exactly. Yeah. So what if just walking through the front door was the goal for that particular day? And then you gave yourself permission to turn around and go back home. Or what if just doing one exercise was the goal? Or just walking on the treadmill for 10 minutes? Whatever your ultimate goal is, what if you broke it down, not even to baby steps, but into infant steps? And then just commit it to doing whatever you can do on an average day, where you're probably going to be a little stressed. You're probably going to be a little sleep deprived. You're probably going to, you know, have a headache if that's something you've experienced a lot of in your past. Work is probably going to be busy. You factor in all of the things that we typically use as important sounding excuses, and you ask yourself a different question. You ask yourself, if out of these 12 things that are common in my life, if 3 or 4 of them were happening on any given day, what would I commit to doing? And if you do less than you're capable of doing on those days, oftentimes it'll leave you wanting more. And that's how you start to develop a habit of doing the thing more consistently, because you always feel like I could do a little bit more, instead of the opposite, which is, let me go the David Goggins approach and do way more because I haven't done anything. So let me just do way more.
Make up for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then now I have shin splints and I'm sore and I'm tired. And, you know, because I woke up at 3 a.m. to run 10 miles. I've never run 10 miles before, but I pushed myself. But now I've injured myself and now I can't do anything. I can't even walk for another 2 weeks. And then 2 weeks goes by and we forget about it.
Yeah. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, for most people, it's like common sense, but we need reminders. I mean, I also think that we overlook what really is like the minimum effective dose to have a meaningful impact when we're, especially if you're making like lifestyle changes, like we don't realize how big of an impact, a positive impact you have from something really small. Like, you don't need to be a 30-mile-a-week runner or whatever. Like, if you don't sleep well or you don't prioritize your sleep well, like, you don't set yourself up for success with it because you're, I don't know, answering work emails till midnight or whatever. Like, if you do 15 minutes more of sleep, if you go to bed 15 minutes earlier, it doesn't seem like much, but, like, over, you know, a year, it's a 100 hours, you know, over a decade, it's 1,000 hours of more rest and recovery, regeneration and DNA repair. And like, over time, that would probably have a dramatic impact on the trajectory and like how your physical body and mental state, emotional state show up in the world. But we, for whatever reason, like, we're disconnected with what is like a minimum effective dose for progress. And if people realize that, and they realize like you can have a lot of success with small changes, You know, it's just something we're not, you know, you don't, you go through like the traditional schooling system. There's no like class on how to make little changes in your life to improve, you know, it's like you have to have some awareness and find out stuff on your own or stumble upon the right book for you or.
Yeah. It ties into our cultural indoctrination of success. You know, people say success loves speed. And I equate that with a scarcity as a scarcity mentality, meaning I agree that if you go faster in certain things, you can achieve a goal faster than if you went slower. But there's this thinking that once I achieve the goal, I'm going to feel differently about myself than I felt before I achieved the goal. So I need to get to the goal as fast as possible. And what they talk about in Eastern philosophy is the opposite. The journey is the destination.
Before we begin today's episode, I want to share something really special with you, something I've been pouring my heart into. If you've been feeling tired in a way that sleep doesn't fix, if you've noticed you're carrying tension all the time, or you're stuck in that cycle of pushing, achieving, caring for everyone else, and running on empty, I've created something just for you. It's a weekend retreat called The Deep Unwind, and I'll be guiding it in person at the beautiful Art of Living Retreat Center in the Blue Ridge Mountains in North Carolina. This experience is for the helpers, the overthinkers, the high achievers, the sensitive souls, the ones who are strong for everyone else, but craving a safe place to finally put down the heavy weight of responsibility and let their shoulders relax. Together, we'll spend the weekend slowing down and gently unwinding the patterns that lead to burnout and self-criticism. Through somatic practices, guided hypnotherapy, nervous system healing, and myofascial release, you'll learn how to feel safe in your body again. You'll learn how to soften your inner critic, and you'll experience how to truly rest, not just collapse or detach, but to deeply restore. You'll leave feeling lighter, clearer, more grounded, and more connected to yourself than you've felt in a long time. And everyone who joins us will receive a myofascial release kit with my favorite tools that I personally use and teach with, plus a signed copy of my book so you can continue the work at home. If this sounds like exactly what your nervous system has been asking for, I'd love to meet you there. You can learn more and reserve your spot at themindfulmovement.com/retreat. I look forward to welcoming you to The Deep Unwind.
If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard me talk about how important it is to regulate your nervous system. This goes for healing, for focus, for just overall emotional well-being. But the reality is that even if we know the tools to help do this, whether it's breathing or meditation or just slowing down, it can still be really hard to stay regulated throughout a busy day. That's one reason I've really been interested in the Apollo Wearable by Apollo Neuro. Sarah and I both use this device regularly and have found it very beneficial. It's a small wearable device that uses gentle vibrations, and they're designed to signal safety to your nervous system. What's fascinating is that those signals can help your body shift out of a stress state and into a calmer, more regulated state. What I like about it, most of all, is that even though it can work great alongside practices like meditation or breath work, the real value is that you can wear it throughout your day, even while you're at work, and just let it work its magic on your nervous system. The other standout use that I rely on is wearing it to bed. Not only does it help me fall asleep fast, but I often wake up around 3 a.m. and I can just tap the button on it and it will help lull me back to sleep quickly. If you want to learn more, check out the podcast episode with the founder, David Rabin, and you could explore more about the technology itself. But if you're someone that struggles with anxiety or feeling wired or overwhelmed, or you're simply looking for more nervous system support in daily life, it might be something worth exploring. You can learn more about the Apollo Wearable and how it works and save $99 on a new device at apolloneuro.com/mindful or click the link in the show notes. I promise you won't regret this investment. I truly believe it's the best bang for the buck in the wellness tech space.
So I would argue that instead of getting fulfilled from the goal, you want to cultivate more fulfillment in the process of achieving the goal. And you may realize that there are ways to tweak the goal that are more aligned with what you ultimately want versus staying fixated on this particular path, thinking that there is a treasure of gold at the end of the rainbow. I'll give you an example. So I partnered with a marketing group, a marketing agency, a few years ago to work on a project. And they talked a lot about impact, which I really loved. They talked a lot about creating value, which I really loved. And they also talked about making a lot of money, which I also really loved. I love money, I love impact, and I love value. But what I realized when we started working together was that we had a different hierarchy of priorities. So my main priority was impact, value, then money. Theirs was money, then value, then impact. Which means they were willing to cut certain corners to increase the profits and then worry about value and impact down the line. And I wasn't willing to make those sacrifices. I didn't want to sacrifice the impact to increase the profit. So we had a lot of tension in our relationship. Again, on paper, it looked like we were aligned. But once we started down that path, what I came to realize is that what's more important than just the list of priorities is the hierarchy of priorities. That needs to also be aligned. But I would not have known that had we not started working together. So I had to effectively end the partnership. And I ended up having to pay a lot of money to end that partnership. But to me, the money was worth the deviation in the goal, because my ultimate goal is impact. And I just knew that there were other ways to do that where I could prioritize impact first and then everything else would come after that. And if I wasn't in that sort of mindset, where for me, success equals impact. So I'm still speeding towards something, but it's not towards the goal, it's towards the impact. And for me, that became the goal. So an invitation that a lot of people I invite my readers to do is to redefine some of these terms for themselves, because that's going to dictate how they proceed in these various areas of their life. What does success look like health-wise? Maybe it's not having a six-pack, but maybe it's being strong enough to play with your kids. What does health look like financially? Maybe you're not a billionaire yet, but you know, you can pay your bills and have a little bit left over to enjoy yourself in whatever ways you want to do that. What does success look like in relationship? Maybe you don't have a Victoria's Secret model or a, you know, the Marlboro man as a husband, but you have someone who you can relate to as friends first. And yet you still also have an attraction for them and you feel like you can be yourself. Right, there's no one size fits all. You get to determine for yourself what success looks like. And the overarching goal to all of this is just presence. Because when we're not present, usually it's because we have an expectation of what something should be and it's not showing up in that way. And it yanks us into past regret. Oh, why did I get into this partnership? Or future worry. You're anxious about, oh, what is my community going to think about me shortcutting success at the expense of value.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You know, in the online stuff I see, I think it's common. I mean, you'll have like creators that have some kind of passion. I mean, you see it in the business, in like brick and mortar business too, but like you'll see people that have a passion and it shows and it like radiates off them. And because of it, it's like it attracts people. It's like but then they get like numbers, like YouTube is showing them numbers and analytics. And it's like you were making no money and you were just like being you and you found this creative outlet and it was great and people liked it. And then you start asking a different question like, well, what would my viewers want to see? What would do well? What's good for the, how do I match the algorithm? And it's like, well, now you're not, you don't have the same hierarchy, as you mentioned. Like, you're solving for a different problem, and the output is very different. And the energy is felt. Like, people, you know, you can't hide it. It will radiate off through your creative expression, whatever it is. And it's hard not to. Like, there's been times, I know my wife, like, first of all, my wife built a YouTube channel that's done really well. And over the years, there's been so many times where there's some third party, like you say, somebody that wants a partner that has all these ideas. And it's like, some of them might be great, but it's like, you're no longer doing the thing that you did, that you liked, that attracted people in the first place then. And then you're like on a hamster wheel of, you're solving this other problem that was never a question you originally had. It was never something you were trying to solve for. I mean, it happened. I'm sure it's all over the place. But like you mentioned, you know, what kind of like outcomes, if you connect with the outcomes that you do value and you stay connected with them, like you're mindful of them, you're present, you sit with them, it's easier to find more, I would say, like joy or love out of being more process-based. Like the joy or the love of what you're doing will emerge knowing that you're acting in a way that aligns with something that you've decided is something that you value, like your hierarchy. Like you mentioned, you don't have to have a six-pack, whatever. I remember in the gym, there's been many times where people just have an expectation that they're going to be able to do something, or they'll be as good as they used to be. And it'll be like, well, you haven't been in the gym in 20 fucking years. Like, don't expect to walk in after 20. But the more you're thinking about the playing with your grandkids, like the outcomes that really matter, then not only is it easier to lift the front door, but the you're like happy. You're happy doing the thing. You're happy practicing. You're not attached to like how the set goes, or did you do more weight this week than last week? It's like, oh, I know I'm doing something important to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's these are questions that I think are very useful to ask ourselves that people rarely stop and really deeply consider. You know, like if you ask the average person on the street, hey, what's your life mission? What are you, when you wake up in the morning, what mission is guiding your behavior, your actions, your thoughts, your words? I don't think most people would be able to answer that question succinctly because they just haven't thought about it, right? You know?
Well, why maybe, do you think that is? Like, why do you think people on average don't? Like,
well, one reason is because we adopt a lot of what we see around us as being optimal. So, for instance, if you ask people what does success mean to you, most people will probably equate it to making money, just making a lot of money. And I want to get as much money as possible, and I want to be as comfortable as possible. And the more comfortable I am, the more money I have saved up, the more successful I am. So we optimize for that, for comfort, for grinding ourselves down to the bone in order to make as much money as possible. Then when somebody dies early and you look at the comments that people make, everyone's saying, rest well, you know. Well, if you rested better when you were alive, you may not have died so early. So we sacrifice our health. And all good health is a balance of strength and rest. You have to have some resistance to stay strong, and you also need rest. It's not like you should rest. You need rest. That's what meditation effectively does for the nervous system, is it rests the nervous system, which then unlocks your prefrontal cortex, which allows you to feel more connected and to be able to see the big picture more often than not, and even be able to see around the corner occasionally. And that those are benefits that everybody ultimately wants. You want to feel more connected to your intuition. You want to feel more connected to the moment, and you want to have an inner spidey sense when things are a little bit off so that you can make a different choice. Well, when you're not rested, when your nervous system is amped up on all kinds of caffeine and sugar and substances, it diminishes your connection to all of those things. And you have to take all of your cues from whatever is happening around you externally. So then you look around and go, okay, what's everybody doing? Oh, everybody's striving to make as much money as possible. That's what I need to be doing as well. And I'm not saying money is not important. Obviously, money is very important. What I'm suggesting is that there are ways to make money that are more aligned than perhaps you are experiencing if you have a lot of internal tension and suffering, or if you're crying, going to and from work every day. Like, you don't have to make money that way. But a lot of people would say, oh, I don't have a choice. This is what I have to do because of X, Y, and Z circumstance. And I would argue there, it's not either or, it's both and. Like, there's some other ideas that have probably been percolating in the back of your mind. But again, like I said, change is not a passive process. We think having a good intention to change is enough. One day I'm going to change my career and do something a little bit more aligned with my values. One day. And that's as far as I think most people take it. You know, nobody actually sits down and writes out a plan and decides, okay, let me break this plan down into 100 action steps. And let me look at these action steps and see what the priority should be and what I can do while I'm busy with whatever else I have going on right now. And the illusion is that the people who are changing have this magical ability to not be bothered by all of the other demands and obligations of life. That's an illusion. Anyone who's done anything of note, who's changed their life to a different trajectory, has done so while they were busy, while they were sick, while they had headaches, while they were dealing with incompetence, while they were raising kids, you know, and all the other things that someone listening to this might be thinking, oh, those are the obstacles for me. But actually, you just have to be more creative in how you're spending your time and maybe cut those steps down into smaller action steps so that you can fit them in on your average busy day.
Right. Yeah, it makes sense. Boy, it's clear that like there's such a strong like cultural and societal pressure that we at least think is there that influences us to not like take the rest or whatever. I mean, it's interesting when you look out in, if you go outside in nature and you look around, like all the other animals, they're resting most of the time. It's like we create this idea. And then you're right, like we're mirroring what we see. We see that other people are being driven by success as, you know, numbers or whatever. And then we create an illusionary pressure that we have to do that too. So you mentioned, breaking things down. Like, what have you come up with as like an approach to like a framework, I guess, to create the smaller steps, if you will?
So what's really helpful is when we're exploring different directions, it's helpful to liberate our mind so that we can focus on incorporating small action steps. Now, what do I mean by that? If you were to say, okay, I really want to get a six pack, there's nothing wrong with this, right? I really want to get a six pack, which means I got to decrease my body fat percentage. I got to go into a calorie deficit. Okay. A lot of people may think, okay, well, that means I need to eat in a certain way, which means I'm not going to have the things that I really, really indulge in that aren't really helping the goal, which may be, I don't know, corn dogs and chicken and waffles, okay? Fried chicken and waffles. Well, the moment you swear off the thing that you really love and you've developed a habit around indulging in, corn dogs and fried chicken and waffles, to use that example, guess what you're going to be thinking about all the time as you're walking around, you know, going past little restaurants and cafes, You're going to be thinking, oh my God, I would love some chicken and waffles right now. I'd love some corn dogs. Oh, I don't know how much longer I can do this. Because
we're addicted
what we don't realize
to what's familiar.
Well, like, yeah, there's that. But also this idea that I'm never going to have it again makes us think about it all the time.
Oh, gotcha.
But what if you only committed to 1 week? I'm just going to do a week of no chicken and waffles and or corn dogs. Maybe not even both. Maybe I just start with corn dogs. I'm just not going to have corn dogs. I can have all the chicken and waffles I want. I'm just not going to have corn dogs for a week, for 7 days. And if a week is too intense, then I'll stretch those 7 days out as long as I need to. Maybe it's over 7 weeks. And on Saturdays, those are the days where I'm going to be corn dog free. Just to give yourself the experience and let yourself know that you can do it. And at the end of those 7 days, you can re-up. You can say, okay, let me extend it another 7 days. Or you can go back and have all the corn dogs you want and then come back and do another 7 days like that. So that's what the tortoise approach invites the reader to do, is to change in increments of 7 days with the minimum viable action step, just to give yourself an experience of how it feels. And because there's a hard deadline, which is just 7 days, your mind is liberated because you can tell yourself, okay, I'm going to have a corn dog after the seventh day. So I don't have to obsess over it for this 1 week. And we do that with anything that we find ourselves casually addicted to. It doesn't have to be corn dogs. It may be stalking your ex on social media. It may be lip balm, right? It could be anything that you find takes you out of the present moment. And then we have 7 days of meditation. So just sitting up in your bed first thing in the morning for a couple of minutes, eyes closed, and just having a stillness experience for just 2 minutes. So not so much that you start thinking, oh, I have such a monkey mind, I can't do this, but ideally doing it in a way that leaves you wanting more. Oh, 2 minutes is nothing. I could have gone another 2 minutes. Okay, fine. Keep doing just 2 minutes until you work your way up to doing 7 days in a row. Then reward yourself for your consistency by bumping it up one more minute. And it may take you 6 months to establish a 15-minute long stillness practice in the morning, but you did so by keeping it in the delight category as opposed to letting it veer off into the chore category. And then there are 8 other 7-day challenges in the book. Gratitude, cold exposure, taking a 30-second cold shower, just for the mental strengthening component. Walking more, which we talked about in our last episode. Forgiveness, practicing forgiveness, not of people who you've recognized that, oh, they were innocent, but people who you swore you'd never forgive. What would happen energetically if you actually forgave those people for the things they did, and even forgave yourself for something you said you'd never forgive yourself for? Physical feat, practicing running your first mile or doing your first pull-up or doing your first handstand. The most challenging challenge is no complaining, going 7 days without uttering a complaint or typing a complaint from the moment you open your eyes to the moment you close your eyes at night. That one takes people 3 or 4 months before they can go 7 full days without complaining. The first thing they notice is, oh my God, everybody I'm associated with is a complainer. Yeah. That's how we bond.
Right. Interesting. Saying
yes to things that scare you, such as, you know, entering a competition, getting up and giving a talk, anything that pushes you out of your comfort zone in a healthy way. The purge challenge, getting rid of things that you've been holding on to physically that have just been occupying space and you have this relationship with it. One day, just in case, maybe I'll use it. What would happen if you cleared that space for something else? And then I show them how to create their own challenge. So the framework is 7 days, incremental changes. If you commit to even doing 2 or 3 of these a year from now, you will be a completely different person. Maybe you still live in the same place or you still are surrounded by the same people, but the way you see yourself, the way you see others is going to be different.
Yeah, I believe it. The no complaining thing, that's an interesting, I don't know if I've heard someone like talk about that as like an action task or whatever. But that sounds like I'm willing to bet that most people don't probably realize that how much they complain. I think that probably goes on like little doses throughout the day, unknowingly.
Hey, how are you doing? I can't complain. It's baked into our culture. But the whole point of all of these challenges is to keep you in the present moment. When you're complaining, you're out of the present moment. When you're addicted to something, whether it's lip balm, potato chips, it takes you out of the moment if you don't have it. Right? Stillness keeps you connected to the moment. Gratitude keeps you connected to the moment. You'll never be more present than when you're standing in that cold shower. Walking makes you more connected than just mindlessly driving around. Forgiving, when you are interacting with someone who you haven't forgiven, you're out of the moment, right? Physical feet, same thing, gets you in the moment, gets you into your body. Not complaining. You'll never be more in the moment and realizing, oh my God, I'm surrounded by all these complainers. Saying yes to something that makes you feel alive. You're in the moment. Getting rid of stuff. And it's okay to like be uncomfortable sometimes, you know, and not have everything you need in the moment. Maybe there's another creative way to figure out how to do the thing you're trying to do. Again, get you in the moment. So that's really the ultimate goal here, is to make you more present. Because when people say, oh, I want to go to Thailand or Bali or India or something, what they are really looking for is an environment that allows them to be more present than they're able to be in their home environment. Because your home is so familiar, you're just not present. We kind of sleepwalk our way through our routine. But when you go to an exotic place where everything is unfamiliar, you're more present. So that's what we really want when we're traveling, is presence. And we can bring the presence right where we are. We don't have to go around the world. There's nothing wrong with traveling, obviously. But we're not going to be changed in the way that we imagine we are because we went on the elephant excursion in Bali, or we went to the monkey forest, and we come back and we have a few cool videos in our camera roll. We're still the same person. Whereas if you cultivated presence inside where you are, you can go to the drugstore down the street and have a profound moment in the drugstore standing in line, where normally you'd be bored out of your mind, scrolling on your phone, just trying to kill time because you're not very present. But when you are present, you can be in traffic, you can be in the post office, you can be anywhere where other people are completely bored, and you can be having an absolutely fascinating experience. That's what we ultimately want.
Yeah, we think the grass is greener elsewhere, but we just need to water the lawn a little bit more. I mean, I'm definitely guilty of that. I have like, I don't know if it's an addiction, but like we'll go in cycles. We're on Zillow. We're just like, what would it be like? And we have like an amazing house, an amazing property. And it's like, why are we always looking elsewhere? For, you know, it's like, you're right. You're not entrenched in the present at that time. But it's also, it's okay to like dream, and it's also okay to change. Like you might have a great place and also you want to spend the next 10 years near a beach or whatever. So just the act, when you have a task, what you're saying is when you have one of these challenges, the act of like paying attention to the challenge you're in is essentially bringing you into the moment. Like, oh, I'm walking by the corn dog stand and not buying one. Like there's a moment where you're acknowledging, I'm doing this thing where I don't eat corn dogs. And it's almost like an observation of the moment bringing you into the right here, right now.
Yeah, it's like working out for presence. You know, you need resistance. Anytime you're trying to grow something, whether it's a physical muscle or an emotional muscle or a spiritual muscle, you need resistance. So, but we also, you don't want to go to the gym and put, you know, 500 pounds on the barbell and you've never done a bench press before. Just because you want to look like everybody else who's walking, you know, the Ronnie Coleman's of the world or the Arnold Schwarzenegger's of the world. You want to work up and do progressive overload. So you need to start where you are. And that requires you to be honest with yourself. And this is why the gym is such a great metaphor, is because you can't fast track progress. You have to start with where you are. You know, with your current,
it's always slow and steady. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. You can't fast track it by putting on more weight. If anything, you're just going to injure yourself.
Before we begin today's episode, I want to share something really special with you, something I've been pouring my heart into. If you've been feeling tired in a way that sleep doesn't fix, if you've noticed you're carrying tension all the time, or you're stuck in that cycle of pushing, achieving, caring for everyone else, and running on empty, I've created something just for you. It's a weekend retreat called The Deep Unwind, and I'll be guiding it in person at the beautiful Art of Living Retreat Center in the Blue Ridge Mountains in North Carolina. This experience is for the helpers, the overthinkers, the high achievers, the sensitive souls, the ones who are strong for everyone else, but craving a safe place to finally put down the heavy weight of responsibility and let their shoulders relax. Together, we'll spend the weekend slowing down and gently unwinding the patterns that lead to burnout and self-criticism. Through somatic practices, guided hypnotherapy, nervous system healing, and myofascial release, you'll learn how to feel safe in your body again. You'll learn how to soften your inner critic, and you'll experience how to truly rest, not just collapse or detach, but to deeply restore. You'll leave feeling lighter, clearer, more grounded, and more connected to yourself than you've felt in a long time. And everyone who joins us will receive a myofascial release kit with my favorite tools that I personally use and teach with, plus a signed copy of my book so you can continue the work at home. If this sounds like exactly what your nervous system has been asking for, I'd love to meet you there. You can learn more and reserve your spot at themindfulmovement.com/retreat. I look forward to welcoming you to The Deep Unwind.
If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard me talk about how important it is to regulate your nervous system. This goes for healing, for focus, for just overall emotional well-being. But the reality is that even if we know the tools to help do this, whether it's breathing or meditation or just slowing down, it can still be really hard to stay regulated throughout a busy day. That's one reason I've really been interested in the Apollo wearable by Apollo Neuro. Sarah and I both use this device regularly and have found it very beneficial. It's a small wearable device that uses gentle vibrations, and they're designed to signal safety to your nervous system. What's fascinating is that those signals can help your body shift out of a stress state and into a calmer, more regulated state. What I like about it most of all is that even though it can work great alongside practices like meditation or breath work, the real value is that you can wear it throughout your day, even while you're at work, and just let it work its magic on your nervous system. The other standout use that I rely on is wearing it to bed. Not only does it help me fall asleep fast, but I often wake up around 3 a.m. and I can just tap the button on it and it will help lull me back to sleep quickly. If you want to learn more, check out the podcast episode with the founder, David Rabin, and you could explore more about the technology itself. But if you're someone that struggles with anxiety or feeling wired or overwhelmed, or you're simply looking for more nervous system support in daily life, it might be something worth exploring. You can learn more about the Apollo wearable and how it works and save $99 on a new device at apolloneuro.com/mindful or click the link in the show notes. I promise you won't regret this investment. I truly believe it's the best bang for the buck in the wellness tech space.
And so these 7-day challenges, you know, it's like you're walking in the gym for presence for the first day, and you're just going to start from little dumbbell curls. And the mistake that we make, then we referenced this at the beginning of the conversation, is thinking that achieving things is going to lead to fulfillment. And that's kind of like bench pressing and thinking it's going to make your legs grow stronger. So you're walking around, you know, you've achieved a lot of things. You have all this money and material success, which is like you have a massive chest, but you have these little chicken legs of fulfillment. And you're not quite sure, why do I have these chicken legs of fulfillment? It's because there's a whole different protocol required for presence and fulfillment. You got to get on the squat rack. You got to get on the, you know, the deadlifts. If you want those legs to get bigger, if you want the fulfillment to increase, you got to do a little stillness. You got to do some gratitude. You got to forgive some people. You got to give some stuff away. You got to do some random acts of kindness. You know, you got to serve in certain capacities. So that's how you become more fulfilled. You don't become more fulfilled from making as much money as possible and getting as comfortable as possible.
Like, can you, is there anything you're working on now that's like your personal list of tortoise style change, transformation?
I'm always working on something. So I'm currently doing a macro tracking experience. So okay. Every day I've got my food scale and I've got all the different, you know, the creatine and all the different paraphernalia of being in a calorie deficit in my kitchen. I'm absolutely enjoying that process. I'm also learning. I'm still in the process of learning Spanish.
Wait, can you double tap on the macro? Can we nerd out a little bit? What are you doing? Like, what's the strategy?
Well, you know, I was one of those people who thought I could passively track my macros by just eyeballing it. And I decided back in August, we're having this conversation now in March. So I decided last August that I was going to take it serious. And I had a food scale for years that I never took out of the box. So I finally took it out of the box and I started literally weighing every single thing. I calculated my maintenance calories and my cut calories, and I went into an indefinite calorie deficit just to trim down my body fat. I started off at 22%. I'm about at 13% right now.
Slow.
And because I was already walking 12,000 steps a day. I was already going to the gym on a regular basis, but I wasn't seeing the type of improvements that I thought came from just walking and lifting. And I realized my diet was probably the issue.
Did you find that when you started measuring, it was different than like what you thought?
100%. 100%. Yeah, I was shocked by how calorically dense the fats were, the nuts were. I was eating a whole bag of pistachios from Costco a week, you know, and using sticks and sticks of butter and olive oil in every week. And I didn't realize how I was creating calorie bombs with what would otherwise be relatively healthy meals. Like, I never considered myself to be a junk food eater or anything like that. In some cases, I realized I was eating way too less. I was eating less protein than I should be eating, thinking I was eating plenty, you know. But when you start weighing stuff, it's pretty, the numbers don't lie, as they say. Right. So then you have to figure out ways of systemizing it. And one thing I went back and I listened to our last conversation. And one thing I said that I don't think I said in any other conversation, which it really resonated with me. It actually helped me to hear it again, was you have to think about some things a lot in order to not think about them very much. So when I first went in, and this is what I think stops a lot of people, and this is what stopped me for a long time. It's like, oh, it's just too much. I don't want to have to like figure all this stuff out. It's like calculus. I hated math in school. But once I just started doing it and giving myself permission, and I think AI really helps to simplify things these days, whereas before you have to go through these complicated calculators and stuff, I was able to create systems out of the whole thing. And I've done the same meal plans so many times that now I don't have to be as stringent when I'm making food, because I already know, okay, this is about 500 calories and about 50 grams of protein. Now, there's probably a margin of error of maybe, you know, 100 calories at the most above what I just stated, or maybe 5 grams of protein. So I just optimize for staying in my deficit and for getting as much protein, and everything else just kind of sorts itself out. And I virtually eliminated certain ingredients like the oils and the butters and the nuts.
Eliminated butter?
When I say eliminate, what I mean is I'm not eating sticks and sticks and sticks. Gotcha. Maybe occasionally, you know, I have a little bit of a little dab here or some spray there. But yeah, for the most part, I eliminated that stuff out of my diet. So I know that without even, like, if I couldn't track it, I would still be in a deficit.
Gotcha. Well, what's the goal? 13% is pretty trim. How old are you? Can you remind me?
52.
Yeah. You're doing something right.
Yeah. The goal.
What's the goal?
The goal is just to see how much I can manipulate my body at my age. I'm not on TRT. I don't want to go on TRT. So I want to see how far I can take it. And to make it a lifestyle, I'm not saying I'll be in a calorie deficit for the rest of my life, but I don't want to. I love it because it takes the guesswork out of what you're eating. I'm no longer eating just for taste. Taste is definitely a consideration, but I'm eating now for function, right? If I want to look a certain way, then I know how I need to eat in order to look that way. And if I want to feel a certain way, then I know what I need to do in the gym and use the walk, the steady state cardio to feel that way. And the desirable side effect that I was not anticipating was how much better you feel when you make your own food. I've been making 99% of my food. I used to go out to eat 2 or 3 times a day.
Wow.
Now
it's, that makes it hard.
Yeah. Now it's rarely a thing that I do to go out to eat. I pretty much make all my own food. It only takes me 10 or 15 minutes, maybe 30 minutes at the most if I'm really being extravagant. But it's efficient. It's quick. And where I live and how I live supports those goals. So if I had to like commute an hour to work and an hour back home, you know, twice a day, it would be a lot more difficult to maintain the lifestyle that I have. And this is what I tell people too, when they complain about, oh, well, you know, I can't walk like you because it snows, or I can't, you know, eat like you because I live in a food desert. And my response is, you don't have to live where you're living. You can move, you know, you don't have to work where you're working. You can work somewhere else. There's a trillion jobs. You can create your own job. You don't have to take that job. I get it's not going to be easy to change your life, but that's another block that I think a lot of people have, is that they convince themselves that the situation they're in is the only option that they have. And I would argue that's not the case. You can explore all kinds of living arrangements with yourself. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be fast. But if you start taking incremental steps in the direction of the life that you ultimately want to create for yourself, not only are you going to be more fulfilled, but everyone who depends on you, who you're probably using as an important sounding excuse not to make those changes, they're going to be happy that you made those changes as well. No kid wants to be living in a house where parents are miserable.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, some of those obstacles are definitely harder than others. I mean, when you say food desert, I've heard some stories about some areas in cities that are like, you can't get fresh food in walking distance from the house. Like, it sounds, I think it's a real problem we have in society. Like, we're really screwing up a lot of things. But you say you don't have to live there. But that act, I could see how that could be a really big hurdle, especially if somebody has no reference. Like, if you grew up in that area and it's kind of all you know, and you don't really have a reference of what it's even like in somewhere different, like, that's a, I could definitely see how that could be a really tough hurdle. At the same time, people do it.
Again, it's not easy. I'm not right. Giving, and there's no illusion that this is going to be easy. There's right. A guy named Ron Finley, who's known as the gangster gardener, who lives in Compton, who started a garden on city property, on the city grass outside of his apartment. He started growing stuff for the community because he didn't want to live in a food desert. There's a woman named Olympia Ossett, who's a friend of mine, also in that same area, who started a co-op in a food desert. Again, these are not passive initiatives.
Wait, what was his name?
Ron Finley. He's actually got a masterclass on that platform, masterclass, where he teaches people gardening. But he had to teach himself gardening in order to develop that project that he ultimately became known for. So there are always creative solutions. We just have to be open to them.
Yeah, for sure. And like you alluded to, AI helping you with kind of one of your processes now. And it's like the tools to learn things are so available now. Like if you need to learn a skill or something to take the next step from wherever you are, it's available. Everybody's pretty much has access to a supercomputer. And I mean, if you don't know the steps from A to B, you could literally ask AI and it'll tell you the steps to take. I mean,
even with like lifting, with working out, you know, I've never seen somebody do a plank without their feet touching the ground until social media. And when you go on social media now, you can see people doing all kinds of things, right, doing muscle ups where they're jumping up and twirling around. And, you know, these are people who've committed to doing so much with the bar that it's just incredible, right? In parkour, seeing people climb buildings with no equipment.
Humans are crazy. The things can do.
But we have access now to people, to examples of people who've done all kinds of incredible things. So there's no excuse anymore about why I have to deal with the situation that I'm in. And if you don't have an example, be the example. Show us how you can change. That's a challenge to everybody, myself included, to not accept mediocre anymore. It's not easy. It's not going to be, you know, convenient. It's probably going to take a long time, but you can literally give people who are in your same situation hope just by taking steps in the direction of making the change that you want to see in the world.
What are you doing for, you said you're also trying to learn or keep up with learning of Spanish. What's your like strategy? What's that process look like? Is it like a certain number of minutes a day or?
You know, it's an interesting question. I've done so many different methods. I've done privates, I've done groups, I've done online, I've done just conversation. What I haven't been doing though is being consistent. And so I'm currently in the process of figuring out the tortoise approach, something that's going to work for me that will allow me over extended period of time to very gradually make myself more and more conversational. And so where I'm landing right now with that is learning. So I do speak a good amount of Spanish and I do understand how Spanish is spoken, which took me years to get to this point. But what I don't know is a lot of the vocabulary still and a lot of the irregular words. There are a lot of words in Spanish that don't fit the normal cadence or the normal conjugations. And so you have to learn all of those irregular words. And one method that I'm resonating with a lot now is just getting in the habit of telling one story a day in Spanish, just a few sentences about whatever I've been experiencing in my life, because that's the stuff I would be talking about the most. And committing to doing that, which would only take me probably, 10 or 15 minutes to tell a story, to maybe start by writing it down and then speaking it, and just doing that, telling a story, using common phrases and looking them up when I don't know what they are. And then if I've come across phrases that are new, rehearsing those while telling the story and repeating that same practice every day and just seeing how that works.
That sounds like it would be pretty effective. I would think that that would be a lot more effective than just like trying to
learn vocabulary.
One word.
Learning how to say pigeon in Spanish. Yeah.
To be able to say, we recently had on the podcast a study coach and he talked about that, how it was like kind of a waste of time to just like highlight or repeat things. It was like you want to take something that you learned freshly and deploy it some way as if you are like teaching it in some context. And
like take Bad Bunny's Super Bowl song and just translating that and then singing it, because you have context for it.
Gotcha.
And that's how people actually talk in real life.
Did you want to take a moment and sing that and translate that song?
No. That we'll do that in the next podcast.
You mentioned there's something on, I think I saw it on your website or somewhere, about this might be changing subject a little bit, but questions and like the difference between weak and strong questions and how it relates to this process. Can you touch on that a bit, what you're referring to?
Yeah, we all have moments of weakness where we lose motivation, and that's where we start to ask ourselves weak questions. So going back to the corn dog example, we've sworn off corn dogs for life, and because we want to get into better shape. And so 2 months in, we're still thinking about corn dogs day and night, And then we happen to find ourselves at an event where they're serving corn dogs, and they look like the best corn dogs we've ever seen in our life. And so instead of sticking to our original commitment, we'll start asking ourselves weak questions such as, look, I've been really consistent. You know, anyone who knows what I've been through knows that I've, you know, even going 2 months is a good goal, and I haven't eaten all day. And is having one little corn dog going to kill me? That's a weak question, because the answer obviously is no, it's not going to kill you, at least in the moment. And therefore, we've just justified doing the thing that we said we weren't going to do. So a stronger question is having this one little corn dog going to help me achieve the goal that I said was my main priority in life right now? Same answer. No, it's not going to. Now, it's not to say that eating the corn dog is wrong, but it gets us to be a little bit more honest with ourselves around what our priorities are. So maybe being in the best shape of your life or achieving whatever goal is not the top priority. Maybe the corn dog is the top priority. Okay, fine. So now you know that, and you know that you need to maybe adjust your life in other ways to optimize for whatever you say your priority is. So we can apply that really to any goal that we're working on. And again, I'm not anti-corn dog.
Sounds like you are, man.
I am pro set yourself up so that you can do a little bit of both. Give yourself 7 days without it and then have the corn dog.
Flexing that muscle of asking the stronger question. It's like it's also flexing that muscle coming back into presence and you shine.
But during those 7 days, it's easier to ask strong questions than if you've swore it off for life. That's what I mean by liberate your mind.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I recently, I didn't realize that I passed the date, but I remember earlier in February, I was coming up on 10 years no booze. So I guess a week passed. I'm 10 years in a week. Forgot to celebrate. But I remember going into that, like earlier in the month, realizing it was coming soon, like there was part of me, and I go like months without thinking about booze, that I was like questioning, like, I wonder if I could handle drinking now. Could I be the type of person that just has one drink with dinner, or, you know, like, could I? And I was like, I think I could. And I spent some time like really considering it, because I still miss it like a lot sometimes. And I'm like, why am I punishing myself forever just because I had a drinking problem back then? And then I started to like kind of come to, I wouldn't know if they were questions, but like the stronger points of like why I don't drink, and like a sense of like feeling I'm like letting down the most important people to me. And it was like, oh, that makes it easier. Like, I want to be the type of person that doesn't let down the most important people in my life.
And, exactly. Yeah, and that
but
gets
there was
out
a
of...
moment where I was like close, like, I think maybe I could just celebrate and test myself. Like, can I just have a drink? This is, could be a slippery slope.
Yeah, we want to get it out of the punishment category,
right?
by reminding ourselves, oh, I'm not anti-alcohol. I'm pro awareness. I'm pro responsibility. I'm pro, you know, showing up for people that I say I care about. It's like this guy, Dan Goh, he has this quote, you say you'll do anything for your kids, right? You'll die for your kids. Why don't you get healthy for your kids? You know? So it's like, we don't make that connection that making healthier choices is also for our family. It's not just about dying and about giving them whatever they need, or, you know, these kinds of things, protection. It's also about getting healthy and optimizing to be there so that our kids don't have to spend all their money and take all their time taking care of us, because we neglected ourselves, you know, over 40 or 50 years. So,
it's a real mindset shift. I mean, but there, like, that's its own skill. Like, the energy of the language that we're using in our mind when we're trying to frame, like, if somebody is, I don't know, trying to, let's say they're 40 pounds overweight and they're like, I got to get my diet on track. And if you're not used to framing the questions in a way that help your decisions easier, like you create a, you make it a lot harder on yourself if you don't, if it's not like, if the language in your mind and the energy that's exuding from that is like making it harder.
That's why we got to practice. We can't walk around thinking it's just going to come naturally. It's not. It's not going to come naturally. It's not. You can't just have good intentions. You have to practice it, just like being in the gym. You have to practice the exercises, and that's how you get better at
it. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So when you do you work with people like individually or in groups, or is it, are you just writing books?
Yeah, I do coaching. I actually help people achieve their dreams within 12 weeks. So they bring a dream or goal, and I call it the Finish Line Coaching Program. And we work together. We create a plan of baby steps and infant steps that they can commit to doing on their average busy day. And I hold them accountable. And I've, so far, I have 100% success rate of getting dozens of cohorts of people to cross the finish line with their dream within 12 weeks.
Wow. And what does that look like logistically? Is that like a weekly call or?
We meet every couple of weeks, but we also have, I have an online community called the Happiness Insider. So we have a space within that community where they upload daily progress reports, and they have people like me and other people in the cohort and past cohorts cheering them along, which is something that usually people don't have. Like, let's say somebody listening to this woke up and decided, I'm going to write my book. Probably nobody in your life is going to care whether you show up to your book or not. So you really have to be, you know, motivated.
Right.
And usually, a lot of nurture to overcome. Yeah. And if you're a parent, usually everyone just wants something from you all the time. They want to know when we're going to have food. Can you take me here? Can you give me some money? Can you help me work out this problem? Like, everyone's always taking. And no one is feeding into what your higher goals and aspirations are for yourself. So it can be a quite lonely journey. And oftentimes just having community and people supporting you and cheering you along can make a massive difference in you stopping and starting indefinitely versus you staying committed to the goal while being a parent, while being a sibling and child and team leader and boss and all the other things you got going on.
Yeah, it sounds great. I mean, it's great. There's a community support component that you're providing. You know, there's something about transformation. It's like our sense of time, the way we experience it, it gives us like, it's like we're disconnected from the idea that you're transforming anyway, whether you like it or not. Like, if you fast forward 10 more years doing the same thing, like, you could change nothing. You are going to transform. Like, if you spend 10 more years and you're sitting on the couch watching Netflix 6 hours a night, like, you're going to still transform regardless. So it's like you might as well play a more meaningful role with the dials that dictate how that transformation's going to go. Because it's going.
Yeah, you're in an automobile, and you know how when you drive a car a lot, the tires get misaligned and you have to constantly correct the trajectory of the car. So passively living your life is kind of like just letting the car take you wherever it's going. So yeah, you're going to get to a destination, but it's probably not going to be the destination you want to get to, versus intentionally and actively changing, which means you are guiding it to a destination that you want to go in. And you'll get to that destination a lot faster, and you'll have some really cool experiences along the way versus just letting the car take you. Then you're going into a ditch, and then the thing is going out of the ditch, and now you're in a sand pit, and then you're going, you know, into a lake. And it's like, yeah, your life is a lot more adventurous and dramatic because you feel like you're just letting life just do whatever it wants to do with you. And you're definitely going to experience some change as a result of getting out of the ditch and, you know, getting out of the submerged car in the lake and having to learn how to swim in the fly.
That's the fly. The crisis version.
Crisis approach to change.
Yeah.
But yeah, yes, I mean, what's I to agree. Say? We're like,
if you don't know where you're going, any path will take you, right? Like, Yeah, there's a lot of, and you know, maybe for some people that is the wise move. Like some people, and maybe they're ultra present, you know, they don't plan past, they're so present that they don't think about where they want to be tomorrow or later this day. And maybe they have another secret figured out. Probably not very practical when you have to like still get stuff done and juggle the things that do ground us in life, like family and puppies and jobs and such.
Mm-hmm.
Bills.
Mm-hmm.
Well, The Year You Transform, your fifth book. Impressive. I don't know how you keep turning them out, Light. Anything else you'd like to share?
No, I think we covered a pretty good amount of material here in this conversation. I'm just happy I got a chance to come back on and have this conversation with you again.
Yeah, me too. It's good to connect with you, man. You you exude a very pleasant energy. I like listening to you, man.
Thank you.
And, you know, clearly there's some wisdom there, and you're serving by sharing it, putting it out there and helping people, so appreciate you.
Well, I want to acknowledge you, too, for showing up to your podcast. Like we said, our last conversation was a couple of years ago, and being a podcaster myself, I know it's not a passive endeavor either, how much intention it is to get guests and have, you know, consistent schedule and posting and YouTube and thumbnails and all this, all the things that come with it. It's quite the feat.
I have help. I just show up for the conversation.
But still, getting the right help, getting the right help is a whole process, you know?
True,
so
yeah.
There's so many moving parts.
Right.
And so I just want to acknowledge you for all the.
Thank you for that. I do feel more lucky than skilled at it. I'm lucky to have a friend that's helping me. And but yeah, I appreciate that, the kind words. And I know there's a lot of podcasts out there. I think most of them don't really last.
Mm-mm.
You know, most podcasts have been ended already that have started.
They stop after, I think, the third episode. 90% of podcasts stop after the third episode.
Yeah.
How many episodes have you done so far?
I think I might be over 200 now, the interviews. Probably over 200.
So you've been once a year, once a week for multiple years now.
Most weeks I'm doing one. There was a period where I was maybe doing three a month, but yeah, pretty much once a week.
Amazing.
I like it. I don't talk to a lot of people I mean, it's the reality. It's one of the reasons I started it. Like, I need to talk to some people. So it's a way for me to connect with people. And I'm just curious about so much stuff. And I like to hear people talk about the stuff they're into. And I always have a lot of questions. I've always been the person that wants to understand more, like why, you know, which is annoying for some people to hear. But that's just who I am. And I'm accepting it and embracing it.
Speaking of which, I didn't ask you, what's your diet situation like? Are you doing the same kind of
thing? Well, you know, I don't eat junk food, but I do eat. When you eat real food, it can be very calorically dense, and I enjoy eating. Like, to me, when I think of success, like from a monetary standpoint, it's being able to eat what I want to eat and not worrying about the price of it. Like, I'll buy very inexpensive pretty much everything else in life. But I like the freedom that just buying whatever I want to eat that I think nourishes me the most, that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's like financial success. I don't need big extravagant vacations or whatever. But so I eat, I try to connect where my food comes from. So I eat a lot of like know your farmer kind of pastured raised mm-hmm. stuff. When fruits in season, I try to eat a lot of it. When it's not, I'll eat, you know, everything's kind of organic. A lot of, like, right now I will eat a lot of organic dried fruit because I just want fruit, but it's hard to get good fruit in season in the winter here. And we have chickens, so I'll eat the eggs from our chickens. And then I eat some dairy, a lot of like fermented dairies like kefir and yogurt.
It's amazing. So you literally go out to the chicken coop and grab eggs every morning?
Every day, yeah. Right?
Wow.
Yeah. So,
but you also have to hear the chickens in the morning?
Well, we don't have any roosters right now. When you have a rooster, it's a racket. Mm-hmm. I mean,
all your neighbors hate you.
Yeah. I mean, but without the rooster, they're not like too noisy. Like, you could hear them if your window's open, but it's not obtrusive. It's, you know, it's a subtle sound. You know, it's not like obnoxious or, but yeah, but you could walk out. But they take work. Like when we got them, I thought we were going to like save a bunch of money on eggs. Like not the case, but you're more connected. Like there's something about just connect. I think in, as a, on a population level, at least in this country, we're very, in America, we're very disconnected
from our food.
And I think there's like really far reaching costs to that. Mm-hmm. And what I try to do is engage. Like when the farmer's market's open, like I like to be there. We do eat a lot of meat and we're very particular about the farms that are, you know, providing that. And we're super grateful for what they put in to make that happen.
Amazing.
And, but yeah, and then we get chickens and then, you know, I'll eat treats. And I go in phases where I'll bake like sourdough bread. So I try to eat for carbohydrates, I try to eat things that are like really easily digestible for me. Cause mm-hmm. I have, I guess it could be kind of hit or miss with me. Like I want to eat things that I handle well. And to do so, I have to make them. So that's what I've landed on now. Is like eggs, meat, fermented dairy, a little bit of like canned fish or oysters and stuff, and then generally like a high quality ice cream for dessert with some organic maple syrup on top.
Nice.
Yeah. And I could, you know, I'm not 13% like you though right now. In fact, you said you started at like 18 or something, or
yeah, 22.
22. Yeah, I don't think I'm 22. I probably should get a scale. And I mean, I don't want to should myself, but I could use that right now. I've had a stretch where I've like expanded my diet and it's expanded me a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think I have to get a little focus, at least for some period of time. So I don't know. Maybe there's a good way to use a tortoise strategy for that, that I am due to implement. So maybe I'll use this conversation as inspiration to look in the mirror and make the simple but not necessarily easy choices that I need to make.
Awesome, man. Well, you have to keep me posted. Let me know how it goes.
I'll let you know next time. Thanks again, Light. I really appreciate you reaching out. It's good to connect with you, and I do look forward. I'm sure you'll have a sixth book one day, and our paths will cross again sometime. For the listeners, always grateful for your listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation, and I hope you all have a great day.